Hello and welcome to the What's Cooking podcast with me, Kat, and my co-host, Beth. We talk to food businesses about how they got started, the journey so far, and what gets them out of bed in the morning.
Today we're here with Nikki, COO of City Harvest. City Harvest are a charity who collect food from retailers, cafes and restaurants, and then they redistribute that to charities, food banks and projects who use the food to feed families and individuals across London. Hi, Nikki.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
I've only recently joined the company, been privileged enough to do so after 25 years within the food industry. And I'm lucky enough to have found a very happy place that's doing exceptionally good work for our people of our own city. City Harvest started 5 years ago with a van on the side of the road in Acton. The first donors were Whole Foods. So our van, who was actually driven by a homeless guy with our founders, would go to Whole Foods, pick up the food and literally hand it out on the street. So within that 5 years, we moved into our own actual depot with walk-in fridges and forklifts and everything. And I think the team first got there and thought, however are we going to fill this? And we're now at the point where we need twice the size of the depot. You've seen it yourself. Yeah. So that's it's a massive amount of growth. I think the best way to scale it is in May 2017, we had delivered 1 million meals. And end of June last week, in a two-year span, we've done six.
That's quite exponential.
If you put this into an Excel graph, if I was going to a private investor, they'd invest in me tenfold, I think. So a huge, huge, huge amount of growth. And we're actually in a situation now where we're fantastic donors. The method is kind of changing. The donations we see are kind of changing because we used to get, a tray from here or from M&S and all our fantastic, donors that started at the beginning to now we're getting pallet loads, which you've seen yourself. This week, 7 pallets of Green Giant sweet corn. And in the week, it's taken us 10 days to get rid of that. And I don't know how many thousands of tins it is, but it's a lot. So unfortunately, the demand is outstripping the supply. So we're constantly looking for solutions, not only for ourselves, obviously, to service all of our customers, as I like to call them, but also to reduce the waste that happens overall in the food industry.
How did you get into the role? Were you kind of headhunted for that?
I've always wanted to work for a charity, be it in and within the food industry, but they are very, very hard to get into, and quite rightly. Yeah. And so luckily a friend of mine, who I've known for 20 years, who's also in food marketing, happened to know our CEO, and she was doing some coaching with her, and then they start to talk, and she rang me, and I was running my own consultancy and helping food startups and small food companies and restaurant groups expand and grow, and I jumped at this. So I shut down my old life and decided to start a new one, and I walk home every day with a spring in my step.
I love that.
Can we go back to the beginning, about how City Harvest started?
I mean, this was the original founders, so you've got Bruce and Laura. Funny enough, they're all actually American. I'm Canadian, just saying. they just saw the need in their local neighborhoods. And it was literally that, let's buy a van. Started talking to Laura, I think lived relatively close to Whole Foods, knew the store manager, said, what do you do with everything at the end of the day? And they started just giving it to them. And that grew and grew. And to a point where I think when they had about 2 or 3 vans, they were literally picking them up and there was no base. There was no computer systems or tracking that we have now. And they would just drive around to every place that needed it. So straight from the shop to the shelters or to anyone that they could get their hands on. So that pretty much is exactly how it grew. And then luckily we had a very generous donor that 2.5 years ago co-signed the lease for the depot, which is about almost 4,000 square foot, just under. And that's a massive leap when you're not in a commercial business, so you're depending on donors. A lot of it is personal money. Now it's quite a lot of corporate and different grants, etc. Now, but back then it was one person going, I'll take the risk and I will co-sign this and make sure you've got enough money, because anybody in the food industry knows how much forklifts and walk-in fridges and just racking costs alone, let alone employing people. So you're running on a bank account that you're dependent is the next bit of cash going to come through. Luckily, we have some amazing trustees, some amazing financial donors that without them, you know, we couldn't pay for what, for instance, as a charity and the only one in the country, I believe, we pay the living wage.
Yeah.
And we won an award about a month ago for exactly that. So the average person is on £7.40 now, I think, is minimum wage.
Yeah,
London Living is £10.40.
Yeah.
And the knock-on effect to that is that my whole team, as I'm gradually getting to know them, have all suffered from either homelessness, mental illness, you know, not being able to feed their own kids. My operations manager, Paula, she's been with the business for 3.5 years. She was homeless with 4 kids for 2 years. Her daughter works with us. So everybody within the team, it's there's so many arms of this where it's like there's people are receiving the charity of Good Harvest, of City Harvest, in so many different ways. So we, the ethos is that we're just really nice, you know, and that's and it's the perfect place to be. So some starting from one guy helping Laura in a van and Bruce and then talking about it and speaking to their circle to 5 years later doing 6 million meals and having 9 vans on the road. And we could have, we could do 12 million meals and have 20 vans. We could probably be, you know, there's...
Yeah, you've got the demand is there and it's just sort of linking the supply with
yeah,
the space as well.
Yeah, nothing works without the other. So
yeah.
I can't say, well, get here's this what we need for a new depot. That's one thing. We need the money to do that.
Yeah.
Then also, where's the food coming from? Because there's no point taking on, you know, $100,000 lease for a depot if we're fully stacked.
Yeah, you need everything coming together.
Coming together. So it's not just like going to a board director saying, give me £500,000 to open a new cafe. It's can we actually do this? And will longevity be there? Will we still keep having those great donors that come back every single year? You know, and the Friends of City Harvest are getting bigger and bigger and bigger by the day, because obviously it's on everybody's kind of forefront of their brains right now.
Yeah, definitely. Mm.
And I just, it's not just homeless people. I mean, everyone says, oh, you feed the homeless. Yes, that's a big chunk of it. But I mean, in there we've got, you know, family shelters, children's hostels, mental health, the elderly, you know, lost in the community, kind of nobody in their lives. And it takes a lot. So like I said to you before, especially with women, you know, you can have a mum of three and her husband, you know, it's gone wrong and she's been literally left with nothing. She's working full time. Her kids are all in school getting educated. She's moved from a lovely semi-detached in Clapham, hearsay, to having absolutely nowhere. And the shame that goes along with that, you know, for somebody to turn up to a soup kitchen or to a food bank because they cannot even afford to buy a tin of beans. And these mums will feed their kids long before they'll feed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that emotional attachment as well to having to go and do that. And there's shame linked with it. So a lot of the partners that we work with, you know, they're happy environments and there's engaging. And you go to some of these charities and there's, you know, there's somebody there to cut their hair or, you know, to give them some legal advice, just counseling or someone to talk to. And so it has to be, so many groups work together to deliver a service to people that need it. So everybody kind of in the pot together, which
yeah,
is a
and
blessing.
These are some of the most isolated people, and perhaps they haven't got writing skills or English skills. There's loads of different things. Maybe they don't have a passport or an address to get. You know, there's all those little things that most of us are privileged enough to not even think about.
Yeah,
that are huge barriers to accessing work or accessing benefits or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You just got these enormous.
And the other, I think the other big impact we have as well with our charity partners is that they have their budgets. So every charity is going to have a budget for themselves, whether they're getting government funding or private funding. And, you know, each, we quantify with what gets delivered within the year that we're on out. If we took everybody and put them all into what, depending on size, etc., that, you know, they're getting £19,000 saved off their annual budget just by from what we deliver in food. They don't have to buy that food.
Yes.
And only though they don't pay a penny. There's no subscription fees, there's nothing. It's just from us to you, here you go. So it takes a lot of pressure off the great workers that are out there and the great volunteers that are trying to do that end the end bit and really deliver what everybody needs.
Mm.
So I think that's exceptionally important as well.
Yeah, definitely. Perhaps we could talk about the actual sort of operation of it, because it dawned on me while I was researching that it's pretty difficult. You've got an unknown amount of food coming in. You don't know what's going to turn up on your
doorstep. Surprise!
Yeah. And then you're redistributing it to charities. Some people are vegetarian, some people don't want pork, some people don't want beef. Like, there's so many different preferences. Or
it is a minefield. I'm not gonna lie about that. But we do it as simply as possible.
Yeah.
Because obviously all the donations, we're picking up things. We're getting a lot more delivered now. You know, Innocent give us a pallet every single week, whether it's as a donation, you know, all of these things. And that's growing and growing. So our warehouse, and you've been in there, it is something else, people. Come and see it.
It's very tidy, though.
Yeah.
It's very well managed.
It will never look... I'll walk in every single day and I'll be like, where did that come from? So what the team do, and it's because it's simple, it comes in, it gets unpacked, we have to check. You got to remember, food safety is also a big part of all of this. So we have to be liable for the product we're taking in, and also the end user, they all have to have their food safety certificates or we don't deliver to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, because we can't be, you know, that's just the rules. And so it should be. So food comes in. So say Amazon, our biggest donor, comes in with a mix of everything. I mean, from the best butcher, you look at Amazon Fresh, the meats, racks of lamb, Chateaubriand, sausages, and we have the ability to freeze instantly. So we have blast freezers and we have that food safety. So when there is feast or famine within the warehouse, I would say that I've only seen feast because you can't even walk. There's so much food in there. But there will be times when something's wrong in the supply chain or we don't get something. So we have a massive walk-in freezer and a lot of ambient. And ambient is great because it's best before dates, which is a whole different topic. But the, you know, these, it's pastas and it's rices and it's those things that we can just top up, have if we don't have that supply of fresh. And I mean, the biggest thing everybody's asking for is protein and fruit and veg.
Yeah.
And that is the majority of what we get. And we've got organic farms involved. So it comes into the warehouse, the team there, and tons of volunteers. We have corporate volunteers. You know, the guys from Apple were there today. They just love it because they're just like, A, they're shocked like you were when you first came in, and just everybody walks around like a deer in the headlights going, what? And I say to them, this would have all just gone to landfill, let alone the emissions from that. So everything comes in, and our volunteers and team, I have a full paid warehouse team as well. It's just about that stock rotation. So they're checking every single product to make sure it's not out of date. If it's out of date, we can't use it.
Yeah.
So there is still some actual waste, not surplus. We call it surplus because it's more than edible, but sometimes something will have been left on shelf for way too, so we do have to, you know, get rid. But it's minimal, luckily. So and then it all gets separated, you know, meat separate, chicken separate, veg, all onto retail stacks. And then the key to all of this is Jason, our warehouse manager, absolute legend, and then the drivers. The drivers are not only bombing around the streets for 8 to 10 hours a day, they are our customer service people. They know every single charity. They know who's halal, who's vegan, who's vegetarian. Some places only want, you know, it's a breakfast club, so they only want eggs and bacon if they can get it, and breads. So it's a real, there's no science to it. It's just knowing what you've got. So there isn't like an order list, or we're not a Ocado for charities, you know, what they get. We don't know what we're getting.
Yeah.
So sometimes our request, we're having a big barbecue for the kids at the end of the year, like today, somewhere, the Friar in East London. And, you know, if you can get us, this is our wish list. So we say, send us the wish list. And we've got everything, anything, you know, and we often keep stuff in the freezer that we know, you know, Nando's is one of our biggest donors. Love them for it. Chicken. Who doesn't love chicken? But also we have a whole halal freezer because we have halal charities. So it's complex in that way, but it's also simple.
Yeah.
If that kind of makes sense, because you start doing, what did we take in? What did we take out? I mean, we do it by shopping basket. So we record, and we have great technology that the drivers, every time they drop off something or pick up something, it goes into our app and we break it down by category. So fruit and veg, meat, fish, dairy, ambient. Often we get, you know, think tampons and baby wipes and toilet paper and, you know, all these sorts of things, which are hugely helpful.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got that little kind of mini boots in the back as well. And if the guys know that they're going to, you know, a men's sex charity where it's hair washing day, they'll send loads of shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just, our people are crucial to, we have lists, but who reads a list when you're working 12 hours a day? They just know.
Yeah.
And also they meet them, everybody on the side of the road, or take it into their back door. And, you know, some of the ladies come up and go, oh no, I've got too much kale. Because we've had to teach them what to do with kale, what to do with flat peaches. So we, you know, we got some recipes out there and they'll call and go, what is it? Well, so I totally understand. Just chop it up and stir fry.
Sometimes, because I volunteer at Food Cycle,
yeah.
Sometimes get into the kitchen and like, what is that? But luckily, a lot of the volunteers are from all different backgrounds, yeah. All different cultures. Someone will know what it is.
What to do with the plantain.
But if in doubt, roast it.
Or stir fry. It's unlikely going to become chewy. That's really as simplistic as we run it. But the data, obviously, that we collate really drives what we deliver. Because
so does that help with your impact as well?
Well, our social return currently is 8-1. So Bain do a lot of work for us. We absolutely adore them. And they do a lot of, you know, analysis and productivity reports for us. I mean, I could do them, but I haven't got time.
No.
I'd rather be unloading, you know, ready meals from Noons than looking at an impact report. So they do it for us. And it really does show, you know, now that will reduce. I mean, an 8-1 social return is unbelievable. But that was based on now we've hit 6 million meals. But we also now have to have people in situ, hence I've joined the company,
yeah.
And I need, you know, a part-time fundraiser. Laura's been doing everything by herself, and that's even for Super Laura is too much. So we're building a fantastic little team.
Good.
So that we can, you know, really expand and deliver it.
Yeah,
know.
Just do as much as you can.
Yeah,
within
exactly.
The space.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing operation.
Yeah.
Who's donating like the toiletries and things? Is that supermarkets?
It all depends. So Sainsbury's this week, they have a concept store. So a concept store is where they build a fake store in a warehouse to make sure all their plotting is done on Max Retail. So
okay.
Yeah, they build a fake store. So every time there's a new product launch or where's Christmas, how's it going to sit in visual?
Yeah.
And they set it all up. Now they're closing that down. So last week we had over 2,000 boxes of cereal. The week before, 2,000 boxes of crisps. I mean, it can be very, very ad hoc, but our consistent donors obviously have to be Amazon, Innocent. I mean, there's so many Nando's. So that consistent flow comes in, but you still don't, even if Amazon Fresh deliver, you have no idea. We got dog leads the other day. Beautiful. I was like, my dog would love one. And I looked at Paula, who just starts laughing because I think it's amazing. She's like, we take anything. She knows that will go to Battersea Dog's Home.
Okay.
If somebody's driving past it.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing with your drivers is that they're so involved within the community.
So involved. I would rather them, you know, if they said, they could probably go make more money driving for, you know, another company, which I doubt anybody pays London living wage. But, you know, it's not about that. I'm not going to, if they want to sit and have a cup of tea with Doris, who's helping out the kids all day, do it.
Yeah.
You know, of course, still get your job done, but they do. And that it's embedded in their lives. Like one of our drivers, Ego, I think he's been there since day one and it is his life. You know, and he loves it. And he walks around in City Harvest t-shirts 7 days a week when he's not even,
really?
You know, working. So the commitment from the team is, you know, that's exceptional. And we couldn't do it without them. And that's the tall and the short of it. I mean, there's not much else. And they stay because they're, you know, they get paid well. And they have a very satisfying job. Hard work, though. I mean, have you been on the vans for the day?
I haven't done that bit yet.
You go home, I'm like, I need a hot bath. I mean, it sounds silly, but, you know, it's constantly lifting and shifting and, you know, it's very, very physical and most of our drivers are millennials, let's say, to be polite. We're very, very lucky in that sense.
And the small amount of food waste that there is,
mm-hmm.
separated from the packaging, which is a really nice step.
Absolutely, don't start me on plastic! Different topic!
And you're able to bag up breads and things and fruits and vegetables,
yeah.
that are still good. Are they still sent to
Piggies.
Farms?
Yeah.
Okay.
So mainly the bread, because we do get a heck of a lot of bread. And understandable with the loads of artisan bakeries and lovely Gales and, you know,
so nice.
But it doesn't have the life that we haven't got the freezing ability to freeze at all. And, you know, and so if it doesn't get used, majority does. I mean, from other places, we're getting beautiful pumpernickels with like 2 weeks life on them. And, you know, that manufactured bread that does have a lot of chemicals, but still going to feed somebody. So with the likes of that, we have cages of bread that's waiting to go to the pigs. So everything has an even longer end of life. And then the actual physical food waste goes into food waste bins for anabolic digestion,
yeah.
or whatever, you know, the next phase of it is. So you still feel pretty, pretty good about it.
Yeah, it's still going to be of some use.
Yeah, It's not just going to landfill.
Yeah, you're just maximising, yeah. You're maximising as much as you can to actual people, and then to animals,
yeah,
and then to...
Exactly, and then...
Anaerobic.
As much as it can handle.
Well, it's a job. It's like slicing open ready meals... curries,
yeah,
meat, fish, and then putting all
did
that.
Did you have to do waste?
I didn't do the meat or fish. I was like, I just can't. I can't do
I
that.
Always say to the warehouse guys, unless it's one of our like absolutely dedicated, I'm there three times a week kind of. There's some of the ladies, the mummies from Chiswick, that love to do the food
waste. I really
waste,
don't mind like, it. But it gets to a moment where it's like, I've smelled a bit too much allagobe in a
meat.
I need to do
it. And also it's the environmental impact, you know, like everyone thinks about, you know, these things aren't going. I mean, I think we've done 9.5 tons saved 9.5 tons of greenhouse gases just by doing what we're doing. You know, I know
it's just like a buy. Yeah,
it's huge. You know, so it's a continual knock-on effect that if everything was not being redistributed because it's surplus and was going straight to landfill, you know, that there's even a worse impact from that. So we have a lot of kind of avenues of. If I had to be a seller and go out and raise money, I'm not a professional fundraiser. I'm going to get somebody to do that, but it's an easy sell.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, all that data is gives such value to your.
But even when
donors.
You talk about the ready meals, so Noon's one of our massive donors, but that's at manufacturing level, and this is who I now have to tap. So Noon's just off their own back. I don't think we even asked. It was before my time. So Noon's is one of the biggest ready meal manufacturers, so they do all the for Morrison's, all the Indian range, all the Far Eastern range, and this week I think we've had 5 pallets, and every single ready meal still has a week's life on it, but the retailers have given their forecasts, sorry not to be too mean to them, but didn't nobody check the weather, so obviously the retailers aren't going to take the product. The supplier's not going to underproduce because they've checked. They're not going to let that supply chain down. All of them would rather put it in the bin, but Noons bring it, call us, and we go pick up 2 pallets. They're just up the road at Park Royal. Now, at Park Royal, there's mass manufacturers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't ever want to ruin the guys that are, you know, not go to our beautiful stores that, you know, the guys at Team M&S in Kensington are picking through that and finding things, and they're really engaged in it. And yes, every tiny little bit is essential. But when you start to get pallet loads... And, you know, if my van's picking up 2 pallets and the retail value is over 50 grand, you know, it can be if it's exceptionally expensive. That is, for me, is a bigger win than, you know, one tray of this, one tray of that. The one tray of this, one tray of that is how this company was founded or how this charity began. So that's just as important. And not only that, from the ground level and from store staff. I mean, I was at Kensington store and the foods team in there are just lovely and had one lady coming up going, can we set up a City Harvest table in foods and they can donate food or they can donate money? And I'm thinking, oh, bless you, I love you, but I know that M&S has to come from,
yeah,
you know, they're in every company. I'm used to be a consultant for M&S, so I know how the system works. But just to see the creativity and the ideas and, you know, that just makes me smile. And she says, we got one woman, I had to ask her the other day, she spends £100 on frozen prawns a week. And I know this customer. This foods lady speaking, telling me the story. So I had to ask her, "Why? Are you addicted to prawns?" And the woman turned around, flipped her scarf, and went, "No, darling, it's all my cat will eat." And their faces. I wish you could see their faces. And yeah, but this is a prime example where a lovely girl working in M&S Food Hall says she was going to tap the woman who spends £100 a week on her cat who doesn't even know about City Harvest. So it's also about everybody talking about it,
yeah,
and, you know, just...
That passion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, education.
Education. And, you know, we're a small team and I've got one guy, Mike, who's been there since the beginning and he's, you know, he's going to go out and be that store liaison because store management... any level, whether it be Morrison's and all of us, it's just staff turnover, it's retail. So to go back in and reinvigorate, and you know, some M&S's you go into and they've got City Harvest, don't forget. And so it all depends on the management. Some stores they go, they go, who are you? So bless them, they've got a hard enough job to do.
Yeah.
But it's just keeping the flag flying.
That's what I think I heard Laura say that in an interview, that head office level is usually, yeah, all on board,
yeah,
great. And then, and I found that myself, you go into store and everyone's like, who's this? What? Huh? Yeah, came last week and the week before we come every week. And obviously it's really nice and patient. They've got, like you said.
There's a point where you have to say enough is enough, because we're just, again, Bing's doing reports for me on the number of pickups that we have on our routes to pick up food, and there's nothing there. Mm. Or the driver's sitting in the loading bay for half an hour waiting because and we have to be polite about it, but at the same time, that driver could have picked up 20 trays somewhere else twice in the 45 minutes he's had to wait in the end. Mm. So, and then that also is the knock-on effect that costs us money and fuel, and that keep the fridges on in the vans. They have to be on all the time. The motor has to be running. So, you know, from a productivity point of that end, it's not my guys, it's not our team, it's waiting for them. So it's about that engagement right at that level as well.
So you've got someone already who's doing that?
Yeah, so I've targeted them with, you know, going back to, because we see, obviously we can track what they're, mm-hmm. what donations are coming from store levels. And like I say, it could be a management change, anything like that. So we'll instantly see that we used to pick up, you know, I don't know, 20 trays a week for Morrison's and Ealing or wherever it is. But now we're getting nothing. Why are we getting nothing? Previously, even our phones never stopped ringing. You've heard it when you've been there. You know, it's constant. To have somebody just to call every day and go, do you have something? Do you have something? It's a waste of time, and it's a waste of money. So it's up to the donors to really live and breathe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, that's down to, you know, we can't go in there and go, by the way, you owe us, because that's impossible.
Yeah.
And also for I think for retailers and guys that work in stores, and I've been there for years, is it's done, you know. That the waste is done, what they call waste, there's nothing wrong with it, we can freeze it, but end of life for their supply chain is gone.
Yeah, they're more focused on what's up front.
Yeah, they got to have full shelves, they got to sell, that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
Tell us about your previous experience in the food industry.
Well, I started straight out of school, really, into coming from Vancouver, it's a very, very foodie place. So, you know, food was on the horizon of everybody. It was a real career to get into and a fantastic restaurant industry out there. So luckily gone in, into the chefing world. And, I think the difference being is that I was there for a few years, went off traveling and then came to London, straight into the Waldorf, which was an eye opener because coming from Vancouver, where basically the kitchen is run by women and the front of house is run by gay guys, it was a fantastic combination into a militant old European kitchen system. So it was just me and 12 guys, basically. So you really learn how to get a backbone within chefing. So, and then from there went into contract catering, working for high-end law firms and contracting for M&S and Tesco's and food development and so many different things. I love to mix stuff up. I am a jack of all trades, but a master of quite a few, I think is the way I would put it. And luckily I had a fantastic ops director at the time that said, you're wasted in the kitchen, you have a business acumen, so quickly came out. And that was probably 15 years ago. So in that time I've done various startups, worked for different groups, just done lots and lots of things. Obviously M&S for years, as a part of an M&S team, but from a consultative point of view. So I think that's where I really got honed in the skills of how to manage people and how to get the best out of everything, including finance. So, because finance drives every commercialized business. I have so much varied experience. I mean, my favorite place, if I'm working for a group or consulting for someone previously at Christmas, I'd be in the pot wash. This is just heaven, you know, because you can't have your phone and you can't do this. So I think just born and raised within food. I mean, from a very, very foodie family, lived all over the world. So had great exposure to all of that. So I'd say it's in my DNA.
And so much experience to bring to the role at City Harvest.
Yeah, I mean, and it's about food, but it's also always about people and how businesses run. And, you know, businesses don't run without people. A computer cannot do what we do. And I will forever believe that. So I think bringing up from my skill base, bringing that all together and also being able to, I get a huge amount of satisfaction from developing the next generation. I'm not trying to sound like an old woman, but, you know, to see that there is still passion for people to come into this industry. And also just food in general and how, as humans, we treat it. And we're actually completely and utterly gluttonous, I think is the word for it now. I mean, I remember the days when you only had hot cross buns at Easter And, you know, now you're getting 365 days a year. There's no need for it. And I think seasonality needs to come back, but we've gone too far. We're now in the point where we want it and we want it now. And that also leads on to every other thing, especially what we're doing, because gluttony creates overconsumption, and that's why we have a huge amount of waste and surplus food that nobody really cares about. And then you link that straight into people that need it, and you have a solution. So I think after 25 years in the industry, it's an absolute joy to work for a charity and to be doing something good and to share my skills and be able to do something good. I mean, that's about as simple as it is. And charities are exceptionally hard to get into. You know, it's the third sector, as they call it. And you have to know somebody that knows somebody in order to get in. So just luckily, a friend of mine that has a food marketing company introduced me or told Laura about me, and that was it. So shut up shop on everything else I was doing, and here we are.
What would you like to achieve in City Harvest over the next, say, couple of years?
Well, I mean, we've hit 6 million meals, which is a massive achievement. Nothing to do with me. It was all them. I've just come in to take the glory. No, not really. I think that there's so much. The demand is, the need is growing and growing and growing. You know, we go back to, 25% of London is hungry. And that's not every, I was like, oh, you feed the homeless. It's not. There's so many different groups. There's so many people that are in need, so many families, so many children. You know, at 25%, it's 2.4 million people. You know, that's 700,000 are children. How is this even happening in the coolest city in the world? Sorry, I'm very biased, but how does this allow it to happen? So I think that we have to really wake up to it, and, you know, there should be 10 city harvests. You know, there should be one north, south, east, west. We've already got west. We now have east, but I'll tell you about that later. And it's not just a London issue. It's all over the country. You know, every major city, often in Manchester, Bristol, there's constantly more and more people that are in need, and you're physically seeing it now as well. You know, even places like Winchester, which is, you know, upper class, lovely little market, historical town, and every corner there's somebody sitting there in need of help. So it is a national problem. I think with the likes of City Harvest, the dream, if we're blue sky thinking, is to have one in every city, from Edinburgh to Exeter. And they wouldn't be the scale of London, obviously, but my goal now is to obviously restructure City Harvest here, put some business element into it. Never going to be a corporate monster and, you know, all of that sort of thing, because we're still going to stay nice and make sure that we're operating to make everybody happy, including our team. But I think to be able to build, I call it a jack-in-the-box. So we find like-minded people. I mean, you can call it a franchise, although a franchise model sounds far too corporate, but here's the box, find the people that actually want to do it and can deliver it, and then we therefore support them and pop them up in every single city. Now, that takes a lot of money. So obviously funding is crucial to anything like that, but that would be my personal dream and how I want to see it go, because it's grown so organically from the back of one van to now buying number 10, I think, next week. And, it can be done everywhere. And it's not only that, it's we're helping the people, but we're reducing landfill waste and CO2 emissions, et cetera, et cetera. So everything has a benefit. And that would be my ultimate. So in a year or in 2 years, just be able to find where the need is most. And there are people out there helping, a lot of local people doing things, and they have, every city has their own food banks and, feeding centers, etc., etc. But what they don't have is that one hub. Yeah. So the Ocado, I'm not even using that name, of delivery to make sure that the food is consistent, because a lot of these places are buying stuff from Tesco's or asking store managers locally or, anything that they can get their hands on. But if they had a regular supply and knew that the consistency was going to be there, although you do get a surprise box, it is ready, steady, cook for most of the guys that are out there cooking, because they have no idea, like us, what they're going to get. But the system does work, and it's proven to work. So I would love to have one all over the country.
Like you said, it's the structure, it's the infrastructure and the funding that they really need. So where do City Harvest get their funding, and who are their donors?
We have sort of three main avenues. You've obviously got huge corporate grants, so the likes of, all the banks and the Facebooks and the, you know, the huge corporations of the world that have, everyone will have for their CSR a pot of money in which they then allocate to, they actually have charity employees now. So yesterday we had a really nice booze company in, and, you know, the girl's job, she was, you know, on a secondment, but her job was to do exactly this, to find the best charities, to make sure that all their team members are using their allocated, you know, volunteer days, because the big corporations, some have unlimited, allowed to do as many as they like. The average is kind of 3 to 5 a year. So that's showing from their CSR that it's really good, but also at the same time, they are then finding out what else we need, which I think is a great link into that, because not only does a corporation have to be able to prove that they're doing the best for the world, but also for their employees, and their employee engagement is massive. I mean, we get, like I said, we get Google in and Apple in, and they all stand, they're knackered by the end of the day because they're used to sitting at a desk staring at a screen, and here they're lumping crates around and sorting bananas and this and that, and then by the end of the day they're like, I need a hot bath. I was like, I told you to take it easy, but you know, they're invigorated by it and they leave with a spring in their step. So that word of mouth as well, because then they can go to their senior managers, and once it becomes viral, verbally viral, we see a lot more contact from people. So we've now got a great member of our team who's going to focus on that kind of corporate world, because they all want to do something, but half of them think we can take their end of day salad bar, which obviously we can't, because that's not, we can't redistribute it, but we can tell them that three doors down there's a women's shelter, and you know, if you make contact directly with that manager, they'll be more than happy to take that at the end of the day. So it's a big network of connecting people and just trying to rescue as much food as we can and feed as many mouths as we can. So it's that's what we do, I guess.
So was that one type of funding?
So that funding, and then obviously you've also got just random donations. So just before I started, it was quite a funny, I think it was in my first week or second week, I was on email with Laura and Kathy, one of our trustees, fantastic woman, and they're like, what are we going to wear to Metallica? And I said, sorry, what? I went back on email, and we're just chatting, I'm like, what are you two talking about? They're like, what are we going to wear to Metallica? I'm like, what is Metallica, a charity? And then I'm thinking in the back of my head, or is it the super duper rock band from the 90s? And it's the super duper rock band from the 90s. So they're people, they're obviously doing their global tour, and as they go around the world, their focus for their charity was food insecurity. So they called us and said, do you want to come to the concert and get a big paper check? And that's that. And they were like, do you want to come? I was like, yes, of course I do. So we rocked up and met them, four of the nicest old guys. I mean, sorry, they're not that old. But, you know, they'd had adverse youth. You know, they ended up, apparently the story is a man had a garage somewhere in San Francisco and gave it to them to play music and live in because they were pretty much homeless. And hence now, you know, they're one of the biggest bands in the world. So we arrived there and you think these things, I was quite excited to be in the England rugby team's change room, I'm not going to lie. They're going to come out, give you a check, go shake your hand and leave. But they were so engaging. They were so interesting. Obviously, Kathy and Laura are both from New York, so we all have North American accents, but we're actually all British as well. So they're like, hold on, aren't we in London? We're like, yes. London's a very multi-international city. And they spent a good amount of time just asking how we do it, what we do, and it was super duper engaging. Life's goal, bucket list, hold a giant check, £24,000. So, and that was it. And afterwards, you know, Laura and Kathy were like, oh, we'll have a quick glass of wine and maybe watch one song, 11:30 at night. We're all traipsing back to Waterloo via Twickenham Stadium and with 40,000 other people. So we get those kind of things, which are exceptionally cool. So there's big one-offs like that. Obviously, government grants. So you put into, every council has a pot. DEFRA's got, we've got one going in with DEFRA, which will then help support Spitalfields. Fishmongers, amazing. People don't even probably know what the fishmongers are, but you have, it's very old English, it's the traders, so you've got the fruiterers, which is a word I could hardly say, and then you've got the fishmongers and all these different societies, I guess is the way of putting it. It's really old English, and their building is right, if you're coming over London Bridge, on the left, that is Fishmongers Hall, and it's been there for hundreds of years. And so they got involved with us because they also, people don't know they exist, and they have a building that is just sensational. So I met with them last week. They've given us a huge donation as well. And they want to get around, again, one of these old English boards around the table of everybody and be able to put on events. And so it's going, it goes, it spins and spins and spins. And then, of course, individual donors are massive. We've got some friends of City Harvest that have helped it along the way the whole entire time. And we're at a position now where we can, there's actually a bring on a professional fundraiser. Because Laura has done, and Paula have done this all themselves for 5 years. I have no idea.
I can't believe it.
I mean, these women are exceptional. I hope they don't listen to this because I don't take compliments very well, either of them. And I come in as the new girl and just sit there and go, how have you done this? And it's been a big old slog for them as well. It's a huge time of change because they're like, oh, now I can really focus on what I want to do. And Laura is just, she's out there banging the drum. And our trustees. Our trustees are absolutely sensational. Like, I've sat on some boards of directors in my time, but these guys are just there to, they're our ambassadors. They're everything. And they'll just be sitting somewhere in a restaurant. The next day they'll be like, oh, by the way, Nick, I've met this person and they want to put on a gala event. I'm like, sorry, what? And so all very well connected. So money comes from, wherever we can get it.
Yeah.
But I think for me, those huge donations are great, but the new generation that, you know, the millennials and Generation Z who all want to do much better for this planet than we did because they're cleaning up our mess, we need to find a way of really engaging with them. And I think with the new generation's thing is they want to give, but they need to quantify it in some way. So it's not just knowing in the back of your head. It's having something that shows to the rest of the world that they've done it. It's not self-gratification, I don't think, but it becomes cool and it becomes trendy.
Okay, interesting.
So, yeah, so we need to have a little think about that. But hopefully we're having a fundraiser, an actual career fundraiser, which I'm excited to learn. I'm getting very good at asking for things, but it's definitely not an educated, calculated way. So it would be interesting to learn from somebody who's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. There's massive skill to that. I think it's just amazing just listening to you talk and every single person that touches City Harvest is so engaged in it, so active. From the people who just come once maybe to volunteer, from, you know, to the people that you're delivering to, the drivers, the trustees, just absolutely everyone just sounds super, super engaged.
It's crazy. It's amazing. It is amazing. But, I mean, I walked there for the first time and I was just undercover and went out on a van and I left. And I've got goosebumps now. Like, it's a really bizarre, I've never seen anything so much. Like I say, you walk into that warehouse and it doesn't matter where you're from, what you do. If you live in a 10 million house in Chiswick or you're in a hostel up the road, there's always happy vibes. Everybody's just there to do good. And, you know, you have a charity is globally enormous, but for this, I think something that connects people with that is that they know, even yesterday, the Perno guys were in and one of them's like, this makes me really, really upset. He goes, how can this be happening? I said, okay, take a deep breath. I said, this is happening. We can't physically change that. All we can do is rescue it, come here and then make it better. I said, the biggest problem lies at source. So whether it's manufacturing, distribution, government, retail, any of that needs to change, but that will take a lot longer because of bureaucracy and money. At the end of the day, it's all money driven. But as long as we can start this, especially in this time right now, they're also donors. So all food donors are as pivotal as financial donors. We can't do anything without those streams because we will never ever buy food. It all has to be donated. And then we'll never ever not pay our team living wage. So we have to have the finance there. And that all has to come into mix to work perfectly. Because you don't have an unlimited amount of funds and a CFO you can go to and go, oh, can you just ask the bank, you know, we need another million just to do one restaurant. That's what the world you would come from, where this is very, very different. So, you know, if suddenly all the funds dried up tomorrow, we wouldn't exist. It's not going to happen because we know that, I guess the business model we have or the passion is good enough to draw. You don't have to ask people very long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had to go into a presentation to start a new product in the corporate world, it'd be like, oh, we'll meet again in 2 weeks. And this and that. People just look at you and go, how much do you need? And you're like, it could be from 100 quid to 100 grand. So there's something very emotionally attaching with it. And I think just because we're also, And I keep saying it, and I hate the word, but we're so nice. Everybody is so nice. Which to me, it's a bit like, is there anybody here that's slightly evil? but no, and people love it, and they keep coming back and back and back. It's like I wish it was a hotel, and these were repeat customers. You know, and they were just, that's how I view not only the funders, but also the volunteers and the staff. That to me, they're all a part of the mix, and they're all customers, and they keep coming back, and they keep staying, we're doing something right.
Yeah, and I think food is so equalizing. You can't close your eyes to it. If you're there and you're being told this many people are hungry, this is what we're wasting, look at what's here in this depot. No, it doesn't matter like how cold or hard you might be. You can't close your eyes to that.
And it's the only language every single person speaks because every single person needs it.
It's cross-generational, it's international, you know, it's everyone needs to eat and not everyone can. And then I think it's very confronting to realize. And, you know, I think, you know, we're all guilty of wasting something and knowing
absolutely.
We can do better. And it just makes you think, because it's also something that you can do something about as an individual, which I think a lot of charities are doing great work, but it doesn't feel very tangible, and it doesn't. It's not as easy to think, okay, this is what I can do today.
The impact.
Yeah.
Impact is, because obviously all our donors, financial and food, and what's our impact report? They need it for their meetings, obviously, but we can just go, actually, the funds that you gave us, or the kilos, or the tons of food that you gave us, has equalized into this many people actually being fed. So it is very tangible. It's very now. It's very, they can... You know, the guys that left yesterday, five of them, and they were like, we were like, okay, well, actually, we can now quantify you've just done this, this, and that. That's equivalent to 1.8 tons in the 3 hours you're here. You've fed X number of people. They're like, seriously? We're like, yep, that's how it works. And it's funny, especially with corporate volunteers, is that they have to do it, and they love it, and sometimes it's a team day or this or that. The number we see coming back by themselves, weekends, you know, and it's just like, wow. It's awesome. You're doing it because you want to do it. You're not doing it because you have to do it. So I think as long as we stick to that and never lose our grounding, you know, if we do get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's going to have to, I'm here to make it into a more sustainable company from bringing in a little bit of corporate, but not losing the identity to ensure that it can grow and that everything is in place. It's a win. There's nothing negative at all. It's quite the negativity is the fact that the demand way outstrips the supply, so we're just scratching the surface of what could be done. I mean, we could have an aircraft hangar and 20 walk-in fridges and 50 vans, etc. But again, it's a funding thing, you know. So we're growing, and now is the time of growth. So luckily, we've now got Spitalfields. Thank you, Corporation of London, and that will be a huge piece of growth for the company, because, you know, obviously we have one little home, and people are always like, oh, let's just stay here. And I was like, no, this the demand is in this whole entire city, and go from Acton to Bow is a heck of a lot of petrol and a heck of a lot of time, and I think we've touched on that. So it will be also able to just really service the East, and as an EastEnder as well, for me it's definitely going to be my Friday store. it should give us that foothold into another area without a huge amount of capex or money, which is a blessing, you know, because we could go get another depot, no problem. That's $100,000 a year, and by the time you fit it out and all of this, so this will give us, we're calling it a satellite, but I think that satellite will become pretty busy pretty quick. So it's quite exciting.
Really exciting. And can we talk a bit about, since you've started the role, because you've mentioned, you know, bringing in some elements of corporate business to improve things, but keeping the ethos and the niceness of it. And so what have you done?
I think it's obviously it's now month three, and just, I always go in and just analyze and see, get to know them, see what people's capabilities are, and they've all got the drive, they've all got the passion, but they don't necessarily come from a structured work environment. So everybody seemed to be like a slight bit of chaos. Oh, we've got to get this done, we've got to get that done, just because they didn't put the correct people in the correct places, and being able to, this is what you focus on. So not being pulled from pillar to post, oh, actually, can you jump on a van? Oh, can you go on the where? It's like, there needs to be, from everything from due diligence to health and safety, to, that is a role in itself right there, just compliance, because we still have to operate completely legally. Logistics is a massive piece, so doing all the routing. So I've just gone in and put, you know, we've got our great operators, Paula, who's been there and has made this business alongside of Laura and has not stopped for years. You know, so she will now have two senior managers and then they will have reports, and just like a normal business structure, so that everybody knows who to go to. Because previously, with our great, with our darling Paula, it's like Paula, she's the fountain of all knowledge. But is, you know, to be able to delegate and to share and do all of that when it's all on you, you know, it's that's I'm surprised that she's still standing. Bless her. So yeah, now she's now going to have direct reports, simple things like a weekly meeting, a weekly report, what we've been doing, not only for myself, because I'm not there every single day, but for the trustees. They'll be like, oh, wow. And just communication is a massive thing, because it was depot and then there wasn't any synergy between it. So I think everybody's really, really happy. And it has not been overly challenging for me. I've done this with a lot of businesses in my time and going into existing groups and restructuring and trying to, you know, we have not lost anyone, which is pretty impressive, I think, for them as well. And they've been looking for that sort of leadership and that, you know, just to be able to, just simple things like holiday planning. And I mean, it's to me, it sounds so, so easy, but it never existed before, and just invigorating them and giving them the responsibility, and they've all stepped up massively, and they just want to get better and do better. And you know, so we've got a couple internal promotions happening. Didn't really want to go external because I'd rather give the team the chance. And had some really good applicants, so everybody's being reshuffled. I'm not going to tell you yet because that's next week. And so we will close the business for a week, so the trustees, exceptionally generous, so everybody gets an extra week's holiday. So end of next week, we just, you know, have a complete team kind of smash out the depots, clean everything, and then we'll have a nice sports day and a little bit of PIMS, I think. And then everybody's out for a week and we come back, start fresh, because obviously the next quarter, well, October to December is absolute bedlam. So hopefully we'll have the structure and the systems in place that it will just run really, really smoothly, because obviously Christmas nighttime night shelters open, the demand doubles. We don't have double the space nor the double the van, so it has to be exceptionally efficient. So yeah, it'll be a real test.
Yeah, and I guess with Spitalfields coming, to have that week off and then launch back into it with everyone knowing what they're doing.
Exactly. Well, that was my personal target, like by end of month three, 90-day challenge, which is usually just bedding into a company, but I wanted to get the completely turned over, everybody settled in. So now September, they can all focus, make sure that those that need training get it. You know, just settle into positions in order to then, when Spitalfields does start to roll, I will have to dedicate quite a lot of my time to that. So I need to know that they will be absolutely fine. And they will. There's absolutely no question about it. It's change management. I mean, I walked in as the new, you know, boss, and I hate that word, and the reactions were pretty good. Like, it's, people don't always take to that very well. They're stuck in their ways, or I just work for a chair. We've got some very different characters. You know, they're just there to do the good, but they don't necessarily have the coping mechanisms or the skills to be able to operate in a commercialized, in a business sense. But they're all now, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes our lives easier. That, so it's coming on. So I'm quite chuffed with that. I'm quite chuffed with them because, wow, they've handled it really well. So yeah, come September, all guns blazing.
Amazing.
So yeah, interesting enough, it's watching what's going, I'm always watching what's going on in the cities, as you guys do, from every ethical point. But I was contacted by Sebastian Sainsbury, so I thought, I didn't even notice his last name. Connected somehow, but not of any, you know, we know enough of them. But the interesting thing is he spent the past 2 years developing urban farms in shipping containers. So take your average shipping container and it becomes a hydroponic farm. So it's absolutely mind-blowing. So shipping containers are beveled metal on the outside. By flattening that out, he gets the equivalent, I think, of something like 6 acres. Forgive me if I get this wrong, but it's lettuces, strawberries, tomatoes. So you've got Growing Underground, amazing company in Clapham, the micro cresses, etc. They give us loads, thank you. But this, he wants to be able to put these containers everywhere in the city. So the first one's going up, I think, on Peckham Levels, And it will be a slight commercial business, but it cost half a bottle of water to grow a head of lettuce instead of 25 litres. And it will just, that's it, your lettuces will come from the door. So he's got a super duper business model. And he said to us, we will give, hopefully, well, I don't know, we'll see, that we could put one at Spitalfields. Because then he wants us to take all the surplus, because it will grow really, really fast. And then now he'll have electric bikes or whatever his business model is, delivering to shops, to, you know, really nice delis, to homes. And I really, it's super duper for me because it's very passionate, but I think that's the future. Is we're going to have to go, you know, what he can grow in one shipping container is equivalent to a 14-acre field and the way the world's going. So there's so many exciting things that partnerships like this are, for us, are amazing. Because he came straight to us and went, it's great what you guys do, but would you take our surplus lettuce? I'm like, yes, beautiful fresh lettuce. It needs no care, no attention. There's no disease. It's all grown hydroponically.
Yeah, no soils. There's no pollutants or
nothing. So lots of exciting things going on. And I think for us as well, that kind of future modeling of what everybody else is trying to do to help the environment and feed people and solve the world's problems is really cool.
I was just reading yesterday about Europe's largest urban farm in Paris.
Oh.
They're opening. And it's a similar thing. And I'll send you the article. Yeah.
Oh, please do.
It's really interesting. And they said something like at peak season, they'll be able to grow 1,000 kilos of fruit and veg a day. Or deliver.
Oh, believe it. 1,000 kilos, maybe. Depends how many containers.
It's not a container, it's just on top of a roof.
Yeah, no, send me the article, but that's the kind of thing that's what he's trying to do is change all the restaurant groups to the big bit. If you have one, use it.
Yeah.
You know, and then also you've got, well, I just think these solutions are so cool.
Really are.
Yeah.
So should we talk about how people can get involved with City Harvest? If they're based in London, if they're nearby, they can come and volunteer.
You can absolutely come and volunteer like you've done yourself many times. There's so many ways of helping us. I mean, you can check out obviously our website, which is cityharvest.org.uk.
Sorry.
And also email info@cityharvest.org. Anyways, have a look. But yeah, volunteering, anything, you know, we're running different supper clubs, anything. We're always looking for people that have great creative ideas, or there's so many different ways. Give us some money, that always helps. But, you know, to get involved, I'm also quite happy to, and I'm doing a few, going out to companies and corporations and just sitting at their team meetings and just giving people a bit of an overview of what and how they can help. So that helps a lot with, you know, just complete engagement with and spreading the word. We've got the people now in order for us to be able to do things like that and, you know, go to trade shows. And, you know, it's quite random that you'll be at a trade show that's just all about, you know, PAs and hospitality parties, etc. And then there we are, and they're like, this is a way better idea. Why, instead of, you know, you go to these big conferences and you get like a squeezy ball or a plastic pen or some absolute tat. And one woman said, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to get rid of spend. That's probably £5 a head for all that kind of thing that you get when you sit at a table. Instead, you're getting a little card that says, instead of getting your plastic tat, the money we would have spent of that is going to City Harvest. So there's so many creative ideas and streams and some things people tell us. It's just fantastic. If anybody wants to do, you know, pop-up dinners, we're always looking for, you know, places in which to do that. So we've got, you know, Whole Foods has said you can use our dining room in Kensington. We're like, fantastic. Then I'll get the chef from the Savoy to do a dinner, or you guys, or whoever it is. So there's no limit to what can't be done. But the best thing to do is just to come and spend a day with us and jump on a van or sit and come and play in the warehouse. And I call it playing because you're literally like, it's a game of Jenga almost, honestly. Like, where does this go? It's a shift of everything. And if people are passionate about it, once you come, once you'll be back. So that's kind of the help that we ask. And also just to spread the word, you know, just to especially within social circles as well, but also within everybody's different jobs and businesses. It's just, are you aware that this is actually happening? Because a number of people have no idea that there's even, they'll see the odd homeless guy on the street and they think that's the problem. It's not just about them, that they're a huge part of it, but it's everybody else. I mean, you would be, you know, every church hall has got people in it being fed, or, you know, there's some beautiful places I've been to, and there's one in Richmond that has this garden. I mean, it's my dream house. It's in the middle of all these lovely multi-million pound Richmond houses, and it's a part of a church offside built, and you go in there and you're just like, it feels like a really nice middle-class cafe in the countryside where they, you know, there's red velvet cakes and they've got a real coffee machine and all of this is donated and the people that run it. So you just don't know what's going on like 10 meters from where you're walking. You know, you can be in Marylebone and there's the Ginger Pig and the, my favorite cheese shop, and the door in between is actually a recovery hostel, and that's Marylebone. So it's absolutely everywhere. And people just don't, it's quite a hidden thing, because yeah. It's not seen or heard until you shout about it.
Mm.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram at What's Cooking Podcast, on Twitter at What's Cooking Pod, or send us an email, thewhatscookingpodcast@gmail.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us 5 stars. Bye.
Bye.